This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 32. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's authors, books, people who work in the fantasy book industry, whatever the case may be, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything else, you can expect to find it here on the show. So check back frequently for our awesome episodes. For my personal update, I just want to let you know I'm wrapping up the first draft of Cybers Underground this coming weekend. I hope to then start right in on my first editing pass of that book beginning next week. I'm also expecting to get back the editor's notes and updates for Huntress Initiate, which is the first book in a new urban fantasy game lit series that I've been working on with author Craig Martell. I'm really excited about it, and I'll probably actually get started drafting book two in that series soon as I review the editor's notes. Just want to make sure everything's locked down for book one before I start working on book two. So I'll make any necessary changes there and then send it back out for a final proofread. Stay tuned for more on that project coming up. I hope, like I said before, that we'll see release for that maybe sometime this fall. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to, check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. Now let's go ahead and get into our guest for this episode. I am super excited because today we have Melissa A. Joy joining us. Melissa is a fantasy author who challenges the conventional expectations of fantasy and then takes them to a whole new level. It's no secret she believes in the existence of all things fantastical and that anything is possible. Melissa began building the world of Eldin when she started her writing journey at the age of 13, and she's since developed it into something truly magical. I have to say, it's worth sharing with you. I think you're going to enjoy it. There's lots of amazing characters, races, tremendous world building. You're really going to enjoy it, so check that out. The interesting thing about Melissa is she's also doing all kinds of stuff outside of the writing world, and we'll find out more about that in this episode because she actually goes sailing on tall ships, she trains in kung fu, she is an avid gamer, and she dresses up in anime costumes at conventions. Check all of that out in this episode's chat coming right up with Melissa. Hi, Melissa, and welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast here. It's great to have you on the show, and I think maybe to start off, why don't you introduce yourself to the readers in the audience?
Hello, I'm Melissa A. Joy. I've been writing pretty much since I could hold a pen. I started writing seriously when I was roughly 13 years of old, and I developed the world of Eldin from there. And I've got quite an avid interest in sailing tall ships.
That's interesting. Now, I'm going to get away from writing here for a second, but the tall ships, is that just something you've always been interested in, or is this something that developed as you came to learn about them?
It came when I was designing, so to speak, a type of ship. Now, I started to research HMS Victory, and I started to develop this interest in tall ships from there, because obviously with certain different types of ships, they were either more maneuverable or more cumbersome. Like, you know, like a first-rate ship of the line, like the Victory, was very slow and carried an awful lot of guns. So what I ended up doing with this research really started to... I don't know quite how to put it. I started to get this real interest because I thought, well, how can I have a ship that's more maneuverable of that kind of size? And I started to research other ships, and eventually I sort of came out with a bit of a hybrid.
Interesting.
So that's what got me interested in it. And when I was about 20, and my brother said to me, what do you want for your 21st? And I said, I found out about a charity called the Tall Ships Youth Trust, and they did voyages on tall ships as crew, and day sails. And I thought, well, I haven't been to see HMS Victory before. So I said to him, OK, well, they do these day sails down in Portsmouth. And I'd very much like to go and see HMS Victory as well. So something along those lines. Because he told me roughly how much he wanted to, you know, to spend. The next thing I know, he'd bought me an entire voyage from Barry in South Wales all the way round to Portsmouth. So I thought, you know, what do I do here? I've never done anything like this before. And I was thinking it was just going to be one day, but it was an entire week. And I kind of got hooked on it from that point on, really. And I've done possibly about 13 or 14 voyages since. And I'm hopefully going to be volunteering on another one called the Pelican, Pelican of London, and another ship that's currently being restored. So hopefully in the near future, I'll be a member of volunteer crew.
Oh, that's excellent. That sounds fascinating. I'm sure it must be a lot of fun and quite invigorating to sail out like that on one of those older ships.
It is. You have to pay for the experience to do that. But it gives you great first-hand experience, especially if you're writing. Or for, you know, sort of any other projects that anyone might have. But I would definitely recommend to any other author who is, you know, keen on writing nautical elements, you know, into their books, that they, you know, try and give something like this a go. I mean, I know several organisations that you can do it with, including one that helps the disabled to get out to sea as well. So, yeah, if anyone wants information on that, I can certainly give it to them.
Oh, that's awesome. So, we'll make sure. I'm sure there might be somebody that reaches out to you for that information. I know I've always been fascinated with sailing ships and warfare. I actually, in near where I live in Baltimore, the USS Constellation is kept there in harbor as a living exhibit. And it's a single deck sloop, single gun deck sloop with about 20 guns or 24 guns, something like that.
Yeah.
But quite fascinating to see that time period, and I'm just about 2 meters tall, a little over 2 meters tall, and it is not built for people of my size, that's for sure.
I know that feeling, being fairly tall myself. I barely fit into one of the bunks that was on the Stavros Esniarchos. Unfortunately, she's been sold now. So the Tall Ships Youth Trust currently don't have a ship at this particular point. But yeah, I barely fit into one of those bunks. they were pipe cots, you know what they call them. So it was kind of like half hammock and half normal bunk in a sense, because it was set into the wall, so it didn't swing like a normal hammock. You just like laid in a, you know, in a piece of canvas. The voyage crew did anyway. Some of the like, volunteers and the permanent crew got actual bunks, but I don't particularly like them because you tend to have to hang on when the ship is listing. So I prefer to be in a pipe cot generally.
I love this conversation because it's I've had a couple of other authors on who are like actively involved in some sort of a reenactment or historical reconstruction of some sort or another that lends itself to their fantasy writing. And I know just based on getting started reading Keys of the Origin, the first book in your series, sailing ships figure quite big, at least in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, there is more with Crescendia much later as well. I'm not sure how much I can say, really, without giving too many spoilers.
Well, we don't want to give away too much, that's true. But I was intrigued by, you know, for a fantasy book, an epic fantasy, you've included the Age of Gunpowder, which is quite interesting because that's a little unusual. It's actually something I've done in one of my fantasy books, fantasy series, made it sort of in a time frame and setting more like you know, Alexandre Dumas' Three Musketeers or something like that. But it's, I do have limited use of gunpowder and some sailing ship action. And if you read it, be kind to me, because I'm sure I got a lot of stuff wrong.
I'm sure that's okay. We always, you know, try our best for the research that we do. I mean, I've got goodness knows how many different research books. I keep buying more of them, which I'm, well, slowly starting to get through, I think. But it's a gradual thing. I'm not a fast reader.
So this book is quite the epic fantasy. I mean, definitely fits that genre with the size of it, with, you know, the number of, you know, the size of the book itself is about, what, you said about 180,000 words?
A Case of the Origin is about 173,000, something like that.
Okay.
So it's not quite as long as, like, Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring, but it's getting that way, and I was quite surprised with my word count by the end of it. And with book two, with the way it's going, that's going to hit the 200,000 mark, very, very easily, I think.
It's interesting because, as you said, you started really building this world and these stories back in your youth. And it's interesting to see the depth of things that exists in the world. It's very clear to me that there's a very deep and rich texture to the world in which this is set. Is this something you saw from the very beginning, or have the pieces kind of come together slowly over time?
I think when I first started writing seriously, when I was 13, I think I'd started to write in a slightly different world. But when I was 15, I started to do a bit of online role playing, met someone online who I then started doing this role playing with, someone from London, and she had her own character. Actually, that's where the character of Arcadia came from. So she played, Arcadia on online chat rooms with me, and I played several, of my characters across that. And I think the world of Elden really sort of came to light then, and everything else I'd done before, some of the same characters got incorporated into Elden. So it really sort of took off when I was about 15, I would say. So it's been a long time already developing this world, and it's still nowhere near finished. So I'm always developing it all the time. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think it's interesting. You know, I see the same thing. I don't necessarily develop part of the world until I have reason to travel to that corner of my worlds. So, I know it's there. I might know a little bit about it, but the richness that comes from writing in that world is much different than just planning something on a sheet of paper.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the way I do it.
So the two main characters, is it Zane and Lark?
It would be Zen.
Zen, okay.
Yeah, Zen and Lark. I know it looks like the German word for 10.
I wasn't sure.
You could say that, those two are definitely, the two main protagonists, but others have said that they can't really see a complete, a full main character. Anyway, that there are several, main characters. But I would say that obviously those two are the most prominent, at the very least.
They are for me, at least so far. I mean, I know what you mean. I know what the other people are talking about, because there are other key characters that crop up and seem to have a strong role in the book as it moves forward. So I like that it comes together that way. How important is really understanding the depth of your characters when you get started writing? Or is this something that, I know you've probably been building these characters for a while since you've been working on this project for so long, but, kind of fleshing it out. But do you let the characters kind of tell you what's going to happen when you write them? Or are you really a much more of a planner into what you know what's going to happen next?
It's a hard, thing to describe, I think. I try to sometimes a character will just pop into my head, and I then sort of develop them from there. But I think that, you know, that they are people in their own right, and I generally get a feel for who they are, and gradually build what's happened to them, you know, their backstory and everything that comes with that. But the way my imagination works, because I have Asperger syndrome, I don't know how this is with other authors, because they are also different. But the way my imagination works is very much like memory. So I don't know whether anyone can sort of quite get that, but it's like archaeology almost. When you've got this, like a part of a dinosaur or something, and you dust away a little portion of it, and one part of it maybe doesn't want to, you know, come clear, so you just sort of start working on another bit, and then you start working on another bit, and then gradually you start to build a bigger picture. So that's, you know, in a way, like what trying to remember something is like.
I think that's a great way to describe that, Melissa,
you know,
actually.
So it kind of...
I like that.
Yeah,
it's a great way to describe it, with the brushing away the bones and clearing away little at a time, and until you're not sure what you're looking at necessarily, until more of the character exposes himself through the work of the book.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly how it is for me. And it's the same thing when it comes to the plot. What's that? What's actually happening in the story itself? It's the same sort of thing. Sometimes I just sit there and think, I haven't got anything for this particular scene at the moment in time whatsoever. So I tend to go between like a small group of chapters at a time. So maybe like chapters like 1 to 5. And if I can't think of anything that's going on with one group of characters, then I will work with another group in a different chapter. And then sort of go back and forth between as more information becomes clear, and also the characters that I'm in the right frame of mind for. So if I can't think of something for something that's going on in chapter one, I will maybe work on chapter 2 or 3 with another group, and then move back to chapter one when the inspiration comes through, if that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, I know several authors that write that way, that kind of hop around different parts of their book, even in small sections like that. And it fascinates me that you can do that, because that would drive me crazy. I think I would, I almost have to, I have to get the story from start to finish and kind of go through it in a linear fashion, because so much of the story when I write isn't there yet. And I couldn't possibly write 2 chapters ahead, because I kind of know what's going to happen there, but I'm not 100% sure. And so much of what happens there will be affected by what happens 2 chapters earlier. So for me, that's something that would be difficult. But I am amazed when I hear people like yourself talk about how that works for you. And it just goes to point out there are so many different ways that we come at this thing we call writing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I get confused sometimes with them doing the sort of chapter hopping thing, because I will sometimes get something, like I'll write something in one chapter, and then suddenly, that bit earlier there makes sense now. You know, it can be a bit confusing, but, you know, when something suddenly then makes sense, and I go, click, go back and actually... add more detail into that section. So in a way, it frustrates me that I have to do things that way. But if I didn't, then I could be sitting there for weeks and weeks and weeks not writing a word. So I think if I've got the inspiration for something, I will work on that, you know. But I won't go too far ahead. It'll only be, you know, a small group of chapters. And I'll start getting frustrated if I can't finish that group of chapters, because the inspiration is being a bit of a pain to come through. So I can't keep thinking, move on to this next bit. I really want to get this far in the story, you know, and if I can't do that, because I'm working on one group, I, maybe get a little bit frustrated.
It can be challenging, that's for sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny, but you can't just turn your creativity on and off. I know I have a few tricks I use to try to put myself in the proper frame of mind for writing and for creativity, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it comes to me immediately because of that. And, so I know exactly what you're talking about. It can be very frustrating at times.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to lots of different types of music. I have to have music on. It has to be for the right kind of scene. And so whatever I'm writing, I have to have the right kind of track from the right kind of genre to actually be able to visualize what I'm writing about. But sometimes, like when I'm watching maybe a show on Netflix or something, something will click. I go, that's an idea. You know, so I pull ideas from lots of different places. And when it comes to, so like the backstories, you know, and emotions of characters, I don't know quite how to describe it other than that I feel it. You know, it's like I absorb their feelings. Someone said to me, if you don't mind me saying, someone else who's on the autism spectrum, who's also got Asperger's himself, his mother has recently read Keys of the Origin, and she said that she was, you know, intrigued by how much I put myself into like the shoes of others, because that's not something that a lot of people on the autism spectrum are known for being able to do. I can't speak for everybody, of course, but it was interesting that she said that, because I suppose it made me feel like I was doing something right as an author, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that, you know, she said that, because you're right in my understanding of what people on the autism spectrum deal with. It must be that really gratifying for you to see that this is a way for you to connect to the emotions of other people and that way, and communicate that so effectively if someone picked up on it.
I'm really pleased about that.
So the book itself is The Keys of the Origin is book one in the series. You also have, it looks like, a collection of short stories set in the world.
Yeah. Endeavors of the Unsung, yeah.
That's an interesting thing, because I've considered doing that. I have a couple of short stories I've written in one of my worlds, and it lends itself to having short vignettes of stories that occur with the main characters. And I'm curious, you know, how many stories are in this collection?
About 10.
Awesome.
It's a very small book. It's less than 150 pages, I think. It's something that is one of those quick reads. But some of the stories connect directly to the Sirens of Balance saga, at different points in time. So it might be interesting, for some readers at least, if they're sort of wondering about, oh, how did this happen? You know, that the Endeavors of the Unsung will sometimes like maybe explain little bits of that. It's not all of it is completely tied in, but there are some references to certain characters in some of the short stories. And there's two in particular, one called The Crystal Fortress and another called The Scar of the Fallen God. And the characters in both of those are going to be directly involved with future installments of The Sirens of Balance.
It's interesting, because I think it's a great way for authors and actually a fantastic tool that authors have to help connect people with more parts of their world. I liken it to, you know, short stories that an author adds to flesh out the stories that the larger stories they've written as kind of like the DVD extras in a movie, you know, where you get deleted scenes or you get to see outtakes and little vignettes about the characters and the actors, where in our stories, in our books, we can do that by writing these short stories that tie in to the world or tie into the characters in some way. And it's an incredibly powerful medium for us to help connect the readers with what we're doing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, yeah.
So as we kind of close out here and get close to the end, let's talk a little bit about our readership. Is there a place that you like to interact? Are you active on social media anywhere, or do you like to go to any kind of cons or live events?
I'm a member of some of the groups in the FTA, including Fantasy Focus, of course. Some of the groups on Facebook. I'm not so much into the forum side of things. I'm not quite sure why, but I'm okay with the groups. I do go to conventions, but I've never been as a guest yet, so hopefully at some point in the future I'll be able to do that. I generally go to like the anime conventions just as an attendee. I do a bit of cosplay. I have done that something since 2008. I first started to go to expos back then, and I started to go to conventions roughly in 2011. So, yeah, I do get involved with them, and I have had a few sort of giveaways, ebook giveaways. Last year, I gave a few copies of Keys of the Origin and Endeavors of the Unsung to the convention committee I attended to give out as prizes, and some of them were given out at a pub quiz. So I don't know what they did with the other ones. I said that they could go in for the charity auction if they wanted, but I wasn't told exactly what happened to the rest of them.
That's a great way to get your books out there, though. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so I haven't done much more than that. I haven't had much of a chance to. Hopefully more opportunities will present themselves in the near future.
Well, Melissa, it's been wonderful chatting with you. And is there a place where people can find you online on your website or someplace that you'd like them to look and check out your books?
Yeah, I mean, my current website is eldenlaw.com. It is a little bit slow. I'm looking into trying to get it moved at some point in the near future. There's also my author page and Twitter. So they're both under the handle Define Imagine MJ. So I mean there are other social media channels, but I don't use them quite as often as I do Facebook and Twitter. So you can find me on there as well.
You know, I tell people I learned this lesson a long time ago from somebody who's considered somewhat of a social media expert in many ways. And he told me, pick the channels that work for you and work those channels. Don't worry about the rest of them. And I think that's important advice. Pick one or two and stick with it. And that's where you can build an audience. So I think it's, help whichever ones you choose. I'll have links to your Twitter and your Facebook account in the show notes for this episode, as well as to your website at eldenlore.com. And we will check out your books and I'll make sure that those are linked as well. But Melissa, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the whole Fantasy Focus community. You'll find us both over on Facebook. Just search for the Fantasy Focus group and over on fantasy-focus.com. Also, leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. If you want, you can also find on our episode pages for this podcast ways to subscribe to the podcast. That way you won't miss any of the episodes. We've got a bunch of great authors coming up soon, including our next author coming up, which is James Wally on the next podcast. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book just for signing up on my newsletter over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here to the next podcast. In the meantime, I'll remind you, as I always do, to make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.